Hello there. We're Vince and Elliot McNally.
Yes, the great-great-grandsons of map-making mogul Rand McNally.
And we'll be your hosts and tour guides on a trip across America, one small town at a time.
In the spirit of our great-great-grandfather, we're traveling the country, writing the family's first almanac in over 50 years. Towns and Country, the McNally Brothers' comprehensive guide to small-town America.
Each week, we'll be in a new town. And after getting to know the place and the people, we'll tell you, the listener, all there is to know.
In a show we call These Parts, a podcast putting towns on the map.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to another episode of These Parts. I'm Vince McNally, and joining me this week, as he does each and every week, is my good friend, my brother, my traveling companion, Elliot McNally. Elliot, I always love these towns because we're stationed in the crux of American history.
Rarely, Vince, are we in a town that has so much history. This town started from even before the dawn of America.
Absolutely. As you know, listeners, a choice few towns predate even our great nation because they were around when England settled the New World, mm-hmm. and laid the groundwork for what would be eventually the American Revolution.
So this town was established in, 1774, and it really marked the crux of the British invasion, you might want to call it. But ever since then, Vince, and you probably have felt it as much as I have felt today, that this is a quintessential American town now.
Absolutely. It's transcended its, how do you say, red coat past to become red, white, and blue in every sense of the word.
Aren't Britain's colors red, white, and blue as well?
Elliot, we do a show about American towns, so I don't know. Maybe they can be any color they want, Elliot.
You make a good point. And the colors are brighter than, you know, any other red, white, and blue that I've seen in all across America as we've been around this town today. It's a town, Vince, that I don't want to take any more time away from putting on the map.
Let's do it, Elliot.
So listeners at home, take out your comprehensive Rand McNally U.S. wall maps and your commemorative pushpins. Hopefully you ordered ahead for this episode for the extra all-American version that comes with a couple sides of hot dogs.
The pins themselves are hot dogs.
Yes.
So they have a very immediate shelf life. They will spoil within 5 days.
Yeah, each town has a tubular-sized hole in it that you have to plug the hot dog into as the pin.
Yeah, if you think that sounds inconvenient, right? Our manufacturer is in a little town in Bangladesh, and they ship the hot dogs over to us almost already rotten. So exercise great brevity in when and how you pin these pins.
Surprisingly, those hot dogs were better quality than Oscar Mayer, which I was very shocked to learn.
I mean, Elliot, there's a low bar, and then there's Oscar Mayer.
But well said, Vince. So get ready to stick your Bangladeshi hot dog in a town called Hampshire, New Hampshire. And now Hampshire, as we've said and alluded to, is a pre-Revolutionary War town. It was originally overseen by an American monarch, Vince, right? King Bosco IV, right?
Absolutely. So listeners, to give you a quick reference on the time frame here, you have England and the Kingdom of Great Britain settling in the New World, America. Originally, it was a colony, but they thought maybe at some point they would install their own monarch. So they shipped an important noble bloodline over. This is the bloodline of King Bosco I. And by the time the American Revolution was ready to start, we were on King Bosco IV. The Bosco bloodline didn't live very long. Heart problems ran rampant in their bloodline. And so King Bosco IV, when he was ready to finally take over as King of America, he was only 14 years old. Of course, a little thing called the American Revolution put an end to all that, and the Bosco bloodline had to live in secrecy ever since.
But you wouldn't even know that today. I mean, a town that was once overrun by loyalists is now as American as apple pie. And one of those citizens that we have with us today owns probably one of the most American stores I've ever seen. Could you introduce yourself?
Oh, yeah. Hello. I'm Pips Wellington, and I run a little establishment called Knickers and Chips.
Pips Wellington. I just want to say...
No, it's... hold on. It's Pip Swellington.
Pip Swellington. Now, you know what I love about these Northeastern accents? They're just so quintessentially American. You know, I think I'm at a Yankees game right now, God help me.
That's right. those chaps are going to go out on the field and have a real good day of it, right?
That's a very obvious baseball reference. Well, I won't keep you any longer. Why don't you tell us what you do and what is this? You said Knickers and...
Knickers and Chips. Knickers and establishment. Chips. Yeah, I'd say it's a bit of slang that the kids use these days, Knickers and Chips. It's slang for pants and potatoes.
What made you want to have a store that sells exclusively pants and potatoes?
Well, potatoes are hearty tuber, and you can keep them in a root cellar, and that way you don't need refrigeration, and the pants can go anywhere. So really, low overhead was the key to creating the establishment.
Very low overhead for a garment that you wear much beneath your head.
It's almost the lowest garment.
one of the five almost. Lowest garments you can wear, yeah. I think really the fact that you don't need to store pants in any sort of climate-controlled environment is why they're so popular.
Right. Really taken
we off. Have our piles. So we have our dungarees in one, and then we got our potatoes in the other, and people just sort through and, you know, you can make a day of it, really. It doubles as the children's museum of Hampshire, New Hampshire.
Fascinating. Well, why don't we kick things off by sticking a pin in your namesake town here, Hampshire, New Hampshire?
All right.
You've picked up one of our hot dogs, which you are looking at very curiously. I mean, of course, you know what a hot dog is. It's just such an American food.
It's a bit of a knockwurst then, isn't it? It's a worst of some kind.
No, these are the best, is what I was saying.
Yeah, hot dogs are number one.
Yes, number one in the USA.
Exactly. I'm glad we're on the same page, and a fine job sticking that pin in. Maybe you can dive into a little bit of your own personal history here in Hampshire. Did you grow up here? Did you come in from a different all-American town?
Nope, I've lived here all my life. I was born and raised. The blood runs deep in this town. So it's almost like a bit of a reservoir underneath, just flowing with... Do you remember Ghostbusters 2?
Yes.
Fondly, yes.
Yes, all right.
Deep Central American cinema.
Right, you remember that river of slime? Well, that's the blood of Hampshire.
They actually use the blood of Hampshire in Ghostbusters 2.
That's right, it's green. Well, when it's going from the heart, it's green. When it's coming back and it's low on oxygen, it's blue. Mm. That's just science. Mm. Good old American science that... I mistrust and I think is an opinion that can be argued.
Okay, well, we don't have to get into that too much. I will say, though, you are very pale, you know, that quintessential American pale, and your veins do look, they have a greenish hue to them.
Mm-hmm. That's healthy spirits.
And I must commend you on your all-American overbite of your teeth sort of look like crossed swords. I think it's a very striking profile for you.
Well, thank you very much. It's a bit of, not a novelty, but it's an accoutrement.
What's interesting about it is your overbite, the top of your palate actually extends over the microphone that you're recording into right now.
Yeah, I'm my own sound chamber.
I have to say, the audio has never sounded better.
Thank you. It's crystal clear. You can hear my clipped R's.
Yeah, quintessential in any American slang is... their dropping of the R, their lack of roticity in speech. And I think if any American has heard the normal New Hampshire accent, that's just going to ring very true.
Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about Knickers and Chips and where you came up with the idea to have this very trendy American establishment. And what's the future like for this establishment here in Hampshire, New Hampshire?
Other towns have their farm and feeds, right? Where they have feed and vegetables and things for animals. And then you've got your gaps and your expresses and your other American store.
American apparel.
What?
Right. Yeah, those are the two types of stores, agricultural supply and clothing.
So I figured put them together. And the people will flock to it, and they have quite readily.
I think you're an innovator, and I think, if anything, you're an entrepreneur that most Americans would like to emulate. This is the real American spirit coming up with a novel combination and making your own. Elliot, I think I have an inclination that we have a segment tailor-made to talk about this sort of thing.
I think we do too, Vince. It's called Giving Them the Business.
So, listeners, one of our favorite things about small-town America is that gumption, that moxie, the entrepreneurial spirit that gets people up and doing things. And so, to pay homage to them, we talk about them in a segment we call Giving Them the Business. Pip, would you mind speaking about not only your own establishment, but other all-American establishments that really make Hampshire and New Hampshire the hallmark of American nostalgia here in the United States?
Right. Well, there's Crumpets England is the name of the store.
It's called Crumpets England?
Crumpets England. It's so Crumpets, comma,
that's
England.
That's the name of someone in the town?
Oh, it's the name. It's a destination. So Crumpets is the destination, say a town, if you will, a town within a town.
Oh.
And England being New England, so going back from new into old, so just plain England, getting the new out of there. Mm. So Crumpets England in New Hampshire, New England, Hampshire. Full, it's the classic snake eating itself.
Yes, of course. So I'm assuming if you would go to this place, a local would understand that it's dropping out all those like New England and New Hampshire's, and it's sort of like a slang term.
I think anyone in America would be able to tell what this establishment does and feel comfortable right at home.
For our listeners overseas, maybe, can you explain where what you would do or what you would get at Crumpets England?
Oh, yes. A crumpet is a sort of, well, you Americans would call it a biscuit. I mean, us Americans would call it a biscuit. So it's biscuits. It's just biscuits. There's no coffees or espressos or there's no gravies involved. There's no pudding. It's just biscuits.
Well, that's really interesting because usually the biscuit joints here in New England always have pudding coming with them. And so the classic biscuits and pudding is being subverted and maybe brought even closer to its American roots by just a biscuits joint. Crumpets, is that some sort of Nuevo slang, sort of like what was that?
Devo.
Was that a Devo song?
Crumpet Good.
Crumpet yes. Good by Devo. Uh-huh. I think everyone can remember when the American band Devo swept the Billboard charts with their hit single, Crumpet Good.
Mm-hmm. Although their follow-up, Crumpet in a Coal Mine, did not quite take off.
That's when Mark Mothersbaugh decided to leave the band and do more, get back to his roots of the more crumpet-based songs, I think.
Mm, quite.
I think his third album in his solo career, Gideon's Crumpet, was, I think it was a work of art. It was a critique of art, and that's what makes it art.
And, you know, speaking of art, I was walking around and I saw an amazing establishment called Fanny Featherbottom's Nanny Umbrellas. And this place, you know, you just can't get a good, high-quality American umbrella anymore. Do you agree, Pip?
Oh, yes. They're unsturdy. They're unreliable. You cannot be used as a walking stick either. A good umbrella needs to be stiff enough to smack a unruly child's bottom.
Yes. Excuse me, gentlemen, as I let out just a yee-haw. What an American phrase. Yeah. If you can't smack the bottom of a disobedient child with an umbrella as a nanny, I don't know. I don't know if you belong in America.
I completely agree. You should get right on out of here if you can't do that. And just to test you, in Fanny Featherbottoms, they have just orphans from the community bent over so you can test what they call the whackability of the umbrella.
Do you care to comment on this, Pip?
Oh, I thought I did. Well, we have a lot of factories in the town as well, which causes a lot of orphans to be created. Just very dangerous, hot, sticky, smelly factories, which the orphans also work in. But the town's really overrun with them.
Yeah, it seems like crumpets are very hard to make these days.
They are.
Dangerous.
They take a lot more raw materials than I thought a crumpet would take to make.
Well, you make it from the earth, really. What you're eating is earth. American soil.
How many tablespoons of soil would you say is in each crumpet at Crumpets England?
Well, it's a bit of a homeopathic thing. So you make the crumpet dough, and then you dilute it a billion times.
It sounds like an age-old tradition and recipe, one that you could only find in America.
Quintessential.
Pip, I was hoping you would talk to us a little bit about, I think, one of the most interesting establishments that I ran into here in Hampshire, New Hampshire. And it's a service that it's sort of like a tailor, but it colors your clothes.
A clothes colorer.
That's right. I don't know. Maybe I don't know what it's called. Perhaps you have a word for it here. But I took in one of my classic houndstooth jackets, and they offered me the newcomer special, and they dipped it in a large vat of red ink, and now it's drying. It takes 4 to 6 weeks to dry, so I'll have to reroute us through this town on our way, you know, down to the southeast. But that being said, what other sort of dyeing and or coloration services do locals usually partake in?
Well, which store did you go to? Because there's several that do the exact same thing. It's quite popular.
Did you go to Red's Coats?
No, that's not right. That's not right. I think I went to Whites of Their Eyes, actually.
Well, see, what you want to do is go to stand in a single file line and let everyone shoot you down.
That's probably the best one. On Yelp right now, I'm looking at it. It has 5 stars. What's interesting, I think they might be embarrassed, but they seem to have spelled color with a U. I think I might want to just send them an email about that.
You have to be careful where you're going to send that, because if you spell it with a U, will it get to the right place?
Yeah, you're right. I do want to get to them so they rectify the typo.
So you better spell it with an O, without the U.
Yes, the American way.
Yes, that way.
I like how it seems that we're all constantly on the same page. We're basically finishing each other's sentences, guys.
Sentences.
If there's something that I like about you, Pip, it's your commitment to the businesses in town and to your own business. And you seem to be getting up and curtsying and bowing for us to show off your knickers.
Oh, yes, they're quite nice. I mean, I like to show off what I sell.
Is that a Blu-ray copy of season one of Last Week Tonight in your pocket?
It's not that.
Oh, wait, no, I was looking at it upside down. It's actually The Daily Show season one with Craig Kilborn.
Yeah.
The most American show of them all.
Wait, is that a season three disc of Sherlock? In your back pocket?
I don't think that's...
Oh, no, that's Elementary starring Lucy Liu. Sorry, I was looking at it from the wrong angle.
It's weird how Benedict Cumberbatch, if you look at him wrong, he looks like Lucy Liu.
That's right.
I please for your gentleman to stop looking at my knickers.
Well, please sit down. I mean, you're...
Yeah, by all means.
You've curtsied enough for us.
Stop blowing out the tails on your suit jacket like that one scene in Amadeus, and we'll stop looking.
Vince, as I clear the air from Pip sitting down and the powder from his wig dispersing all over the air, I think maybe our listeners would have some other questions that they want answered.
I think that's exactly probably where this show is going, in a segment we call Wouldn't You Like to Know?
So listeners, Wouldn't You Like to Know is obviously your weekly opportunity to write into Vince and I and our guest and inquire about the town we're in. Each week we have time to read three, and guys, I've got the first one.
Can't wait to hear it, Elliot.
Yeah, this one comes from Terry in Platteville, Florida.
Terry, thanks for writing.
Terry says that she is a huge fan of American remakes of British television shows and movies. And she was wondering if us or our guests have any favorites that are maybe particularly tied to Hampshire, New Hampshire.
What a great question. I, too, am a fan of when America takes a great British show and improves on it even further. It's always a strict improvement when we take our own swing at things. Pip, I'm sure you have your own opinions on this.
Well, there's a jolly good show called Good Neighbors. It was quite popular across the pond. You know, it was actually set, the American version was set in Hampshire, New Hampshire.
Oh, really? I didn't realize
that. Yeah, it was all about just some lovely gardeners and some neighbors they didn't quite get along with. And is there anything more American than fighting about the love of your country? I love this place more than you. Get off of my daffodils.
I don't think there's anything more than protecting your own property, be it daffodils or some other flower.
The remake that I really liked was the House of Cards remake that you guys did. And when I say that, I mean the House of Cards was originally on the BBC. Now it's a Netflix show that's in America. Then what you guys did was, I thought was interesting. You went a step further and remade that version as a British show.
What do you mean, you guys?
The people of Hampshire. So you guys remade it as a British show, and then
right.
you remade that as an American show starring, I believe, was it Ted Nugent or Toby Keith?
It was the Nuge.
No, nobody more American who I would imagine as president in your version of House of Cards. So where did that idea come from to make it even more American?
Well, I saw him in the White House and I'm like, I quite like this chap. And the way he's giving the business to the paintings in there.
Ah, yes, that classic Nugent foible where he destroyed all of the priceless artwork in the White House when he was invited.
That was quite the foible.
Right. He's quite a disgusting human being, just like so many Americans can be, right?
What? What? Hell?
What were you saying?
His head is spinning around right now.
Wait, was that you or was... Who said that? Did you imply... Wait.
Did you insult the Nuge?
I'm saying that's something the Nuge would be thinking in one of his two-camera confessions.
Similar to Frank Underwood, yep. What you guys employed in your version was the breaking the fourth wall.
Yes.
Obviously. Well, I mean, astutely said in that case. You know what? I want to talk about a remake that I love. Can I do that? Do you mind?
I don't. Do you mind, Pip?
No, I don't mind at all.
Well, so if you guys have heard of this... British drama starring one of the Doctor Who's called Broadchurch.
Yes, of course. The David Tennant vehicle.
Yes, of course. David Tennant, et cetera, et cetera. Now, what about Hampshire's very own crime drama called Skinny Cathedral? Have you watched this, Elliot?
I have. What I think about some of these American remakes, some of them are spot on, but some of them are very sloppy and very lazy with the writing or even the naming of the show.
I'm not sure I agree with that. Maybe we can swing it over to Pip to get his opinion.
What was confusing about it is David Tennant was in it again.
He played the female investigator, though, this time.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. The one who's destroyed mentally at the end yes. by the series of events that happened mm-hmm. in this thin cathedral.
I think it was great that they gave him the opportunity to really explore that role too. He refused to shave his beard, so I thought that kind of broke the character a bit, but it also added dimension.
Beards do that.
Well, before we move on, is there any especially noteworthy reboots that have been done maybe in Hampshire or, you know, anywhere? Any American take up of a British show that you think we haven't mentioned yet?
Oh, well, there's the classic crime drama Luther from Britain, which America made into The Wire.
I didn't realize that The Wire was based on Luther.
Well, it Idris Elba's in both of them, so obviously it's the same person.
Didn't The Wire precede Luther by about 10
I don't
years?
Think so. I don't see how that's possible. There's the there's the timeline. There's the... What's it that goes through the England?
Well, I guess it's a difference between a reboot and just a boot.
What's that, a boot?
Elliot, you should know better that all of Idris Elba's works are connected in the Elbaverse, and there's a very obvious explanation to why that happens. It involves the international dateline. Sure. Anyway.
There you go. That's the word I was thinking of. I found it crazy that Nelson Mandela would be living in Baltimore as a crime lord, but there you have it.
I am not about to question the creative choices of Elba.
His fans have spoken, and they demand all of his works to be connected. You know, some people just, they're very adamant about that, and I respect that.
So do I, Elliot. And I respect this next writer who comes from Augusta, Maine.
Great. What does she have to say? Does she have a name?
No, she wishes to remain anonymous.
So she does have a name, but...
I mean, presumably she does. So right. She writes, I loved your theoretical conversation about American TV shows that are based on British TV shows.
How did she know?
Hypothetical. It says hypothetical. So it looks like she guessed in and she gambled and it paid off.
Very prescient.
Absolutely. Also very convenient. She goes on to say, let's talk about movies that did the same thing. Hmm. Oh, interesting. Interesting. She says specifically, we all love the British series Mr. Bean. I know mm-hmm. I do. But it goes on to say, but the American version was a slightly different take on things. Published under the name Deliverance, it followed Mr. Bean and three of his compatriots on a misadventure in the southeast of America. Please talk about it because it was set and shot there in Hampshire.
So there's a couple things I'd like to unpack and I'd love to get Pip's opinion on. The first one is I think it's true that Deliverance was shot and set in Georgia, first of all.
Pip, I think that's true. I'm reading the Wikipedia right now, but you're the guest.
No, that's absolutely true. We have nothing to do with Deliverance. Mm. We are big beanheads, as you would.
Rowan Atkinson was briefly the mayor of the town, was he not?
Well, that was in the that was actually for a role in Rat Race.
Similar to Idris Elba, there's such a thing called the Beaniverse, and they want Rowan Atkinson's works to be connected somehow. So
Blackadder also exists in this universe.
Well, I think that kind of clears it up. I mean, I don't think that this anonymous writer was well informed, because Deliverance, Pip, are you confirming that it's not a remake of Mr. Bean?
Well, I don't know everything about everything, but yes.
You're saying you do know something about that exact fact?
Oh, yeah, quite. Everyone in this town is given the 411 on Mr. Bean in primary school.
I'm sorry, primary school?
The main school.
Ah, right. Mm. Primary high. Mm. The school in town, Elliot. We drove past it.
Also a great slapstick comedy starring Rowan Atkinson in Primary High.
That's right. He plays a high schooler, even though he's 58 years old at the time of filming. But hey, believe me, the makeup department worked overtime. It's seamless. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to the last question. I think, Pip, that you've got it there.
Oh, yes. This has to do with... I can just read it. This is from Kenneth, or Kenny. He put it in parentheses, or Kenny.
I appreciate that.
From Orlando, Texas.
Oh, that's not the Orlando I was expecting, but I'm just as pleasantly surprised.
It never is. So Kenny asks, why do people live so long in Hampshire, New Hampshire? It seems like they are immortal. Is it the air, the water, the food? What could it be? I mean, I see your graveyards and they're full, but people are living so long times. Love, Kenny.
I like how he very colloquially wrote this letter. It's very interesting. So you've already explained the vat of slime blood that's under the town. Are there any other secrets to the longevity of the people of Hampshire?
Well, there's several secrets, and I can only give away so many before I'm run out of town. So...
thanks for risking it just to get a few.
I can give one away, one more. So we got the river, a river of blood, which sustains us and nurtures us and nutritionalizes us. And we also have just a sopping wet rain here, pretty consistent. And what that does is it's a bit of a living embalmment. So it's embalming you as you're walking around. You're just being preserved just by living.
Ah, yes, a classic property of rain. It sort of preserves you with its chemical properties.
I will say, when I was walking around this week, it really reminded me of, I don't know, like walking around in London or something, just by how wet it was. Would you say
Elliot,
that?
What a weird thing to say. That's like so off base.
Or maybe it was more like Seattle then.
Yeah, now we're talking, Pip. What do you think about this guy?
Well, before you corrected myself, I was halfway toward removing my glove to slap you across the face, but I accept your correction.
Yeah, I do love your white gloves that you wear and your very patriotic staff, this red, white, and blue staff that you carry.
Mm, thank you. I call the staff good old Union Jack.
Ah, the Union, like the Union of the North and the South. Yeah, right.
Yep, that's it.
The red actually matches the little bit of red that you have on your lips. And then you have those two little dots on your cheeks to really complete the look.
I'd say it's a phase, but I've been dressed this way quite some time.
And there's nothing more American than looking at you. I mean, from your... From your wig to your knickers to your staff to your gloves. I would think I'm looking at the Nuge, but I know he's not here.
Yeah, you might as well be Bruce Springsteen, Pip. Well, so that said, maybe we should move on to our next segment, Elliot, and stop fawning over poor Pip here.
I think so too, Vince. I think we should start fawning over something different in the town, the music, in a segment we call Town Sounds.
So listeners, one of the things that makes small towns so great and so special is that they have their own unique sound. You know, the music that makes the town lively, makes it its own. And so we like to do an investigation when it's a particularly special town, like we are here in Hampshire, New Hampshire, where we're talking about all-American big bands. If that brings up some nostalgic feelings, then you're feeling the right way, because nothing's more American than swing dancing, the sound of the brass, and a good old hootenanny down at the soda shop. Pip, talk about some of the music here.
Well, it's quite original, inspired by our rolling hills and majestic mountains and large pools of contained water.
Like a pool?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yes.
Or a lake?
Yep. Amber waves and such. So sure. It's not inspired by anything except itself and the land it comes from.
When I think of American music, I mean, we've already talked about Springsteen or Ted Nugent or whoever, but listening to bands this week, it really took me back to just the heartland of America and what it means to be American, what that soundtrack is, you know. And I think we have a few bands queued up, Vince, that we should talk about.
I couldn't agree more. And listeners, strap yourselves in for a trip down America's memory lane. We're talking about some of the most nostalgic types of bands that you could ever imagine. Elliot, I know you're chomping at the proverbial bit and your mm-hmm. literal bit to mm-hmm. speak about this first band, so I'm going to let you have the floor.
Yeah, so a band that I saw several times this week. I know, Vince, you were talking about swing dancing. We were talking about hootenannies and country music, but this was a band that was a little more recent day, and they epitomized the punk rock scene here.
Ah, terrific, Elliot.
So this band, they're called the Mop Tops, which I believe is a reference, Pip, to like the shaggy, moppy hair of punk rockers.
Yes, I cannot see any other explanation for that. I mean, Jesus had long hair. So
he did. He did. That's yep. right.
We all want to emulate the G's. Yeah.
The G's and the Nuge. Like, those are the two the two things that Americans love.
Nothing more American, according to the Mormons.
That's right.
So if you look at, for instance, the Mop Tops album cover here, you see the four of them with their shaggy black hair. And I think almost ironically, they're wearing these double-breasted matching suits to kind of say, like, yeah, we get it. We're not conforming to the man. And when I heard them, it was just like grunge rock to the full extent. And we have a clip of their song, We're Totally American. And so I think we should play that.
We are Americans, no need to pretend. We're patriots, that's true.
Just wow, Elliot.
Yeah. Does it make you want to, like, blow something up or wave a flag, Vince? Because it did for me.
It makes me want to spray paint red, white, and blue on some no-good rich guy's lawn.
Well, there's nothing more American than being rich there, Vince.
What does it do for you, Pip? What do you think of the Mop Tops?
Oh, boners. mm-hmm. Just giving mm-hmm. me multiple boners. Just
yeah. Just your knickers are tightening. As we sit here, the table is actually a little off kilter.
Just ignore it and it goes away.
No, there's nothing to be ashamed of. I mean, I think that this band really epitomizes what it means to be American, and that's why I love them so much.
It would get anybody's blood pumping, Pip. You know, I just love how they're so anti-establishment. They're so anti-British, you know, if I can just say that. They're throwing off all the shackles of typical British sound.
Well, I mean, there's nothing wrong with the Brits, it's they're not as good as here, right? I mean, so let's not slag them off too much.
No, what I think Vince is saying is this is sort of the musical equivalent of Americans declaring their independence from the, you know, the hatred and the monarchy of the British crown.
Okay, that's, you know, we can have our different opinions, right? But just leave Britain out of it. They're fine. They're good. They got Brexit to worry about, so you know.
Yeah, they do have Brexit to worry about. That's an astute point.
That's true.
But I think something we can all agree on is, Pip, a band that you were talking about right before we started recording. Do you want to talk about them to our listeners?
Oh, right. This is from, we were talking about Devo earlier, and so a bit of a new wave kind of band, just experimenting with soundscapes and noises. So this band, a quintessentially American, grown out of the expansion of the American towns into suburbs and sprawl, So this is this band is called the Five Fabulous Guys.
Great. Mm-hmm. I think we have a clip pulled up from the Five Fabulous Guys. Let's play it.
We are Americans. No need to pretend. We're patriots, that's true.
Now that's something different.
That is something very different, even from the first track. I can't believe these bands come from the same town.
Right. It's there's a soul inside of everyone that wants to scream, and I believe that's what music is. It's just the soul screaming its desires and its needs to the world. Just look at me.
Wise and poignant words, Pip.
So you have their album cover out. And how would you describe the Five Fabulous Guys?
They're kind of floating in space, just these heads in this bleak darkness. And there's five of them.
What's interesting is that on their album cover, it seems to be there's a triangle, and then there's five of them for each color of the rainbow that's passing through this sort of prism.
Mm-hmm. It's art. It's art being art for art's sake.
And then there's a tiny submersible vehicle in the yellow stripe, whatever that means.
Yeah, it seems like there's a lot of layers packed into this band's album
cover.
It's
actually quite a confusing album cover. There's right. A lot going on.
There's also about 200 blokes from current events.
Sorry, a bloke? Is that a New England term?
It's a buddy local. A local buddy.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, no, oh, I've heard that.
Sure, sure. What I love about your accent, by the way, Pip, is it kind of drifts in and out. And I think that's just another very American thing. You know, we're all part of the same place.
We're the melting pot, Elliot.
Yeah, exactly.
I've learned a bit here or there. I'm quite a canary when it comes to imitating a classical, you know, with the canary in the coal mine. Mm.
Yes, mm-hmm. And how it changes mm-hmm. colors to denote yes. the amount of toxins in the coal mine. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And all the pit ponies.
Are you saying that you have ponies? Pip's ponies?
Well, we have the pit. Pit. The ponies that work in the pits.
The ponies are also in the mines?
Yeah, so, oh, absolutely. Mm. I mean, you have to have a pit pony.
I have a band that I also like to talk about. It's more of a solo artist.
Oh, please do, Vince.
So we all know that the rise of the croon, rock and roll, blues mixed together to form what was the one-man movement called Elvis Presley.
Yes, the one-man movement called Elvis Presley. He was also a musician, I believe.
Well, yeah, of course. I was trying to speak sort of like poetically here, Elliot.
But I'm sorry.
Anyway, Hampshire, New Hampshire has sort of a renaissance of this same sort of single man blues crooner. He calls himself Pelvis Cressley.
Sorry, Pelvis Cressley?
Pelvis Cressley. Pelvis Cressley. And he takes the hip thrusts that Elvis was famous for to, he dials it up to 11 as the American comedy This Is Spinal Tap once coined.
Mm-hmm. So do you have a clip lined up, Vince? I'd love to hear Pelvis Cressley.
Of course. Pelvis Cressley, here it is, listeners.
We are Americans, no need to pretend. We're patriots, that's true.
Wow, that was amazing. You know, something that I always loved about Elvis is that they said that he kind of almost had his own dialect, you know, his own little vocal idiosyncrasies. And these guys sound like they almost have an accent of some kind.
Mm. Pip, care to expand on that?
Well, everyone comes from somewhere, right? So we're all going to be beholden to the sounds around us, the trees, the buzzing of the bees, the butterflies. I mean, someone from the next house over can sound completely different from you, and there's nothing unusual about that.
A strangely defensive take on Pelvis here. I was going to say that I thought it was fun music. It's really upbeat. What I like about it is that it sounds quintessentially American.
I agree.
You keep saying quintessential and quintessentially.
Yeah. Elliot was kind enough to get me a word of the day calendar for my birthday. Yes. And
did you only read one day?
Today's is quintessentially, so yes. I don't know if that we need to sort of dwell on this for too
I'm
long.
I'm going to dwell on this quite a bit.
Well, so what Vince's method has been is that he will keep saying the word on that day and forget all the previous words. You know, I think the point of a word a day calendar is you're supposed to build your vocabulary. But Vince, your method has been to just hone in on one word per day.
Yeah, we had to throw out the recording when we were in Gusto, Louisiana, where I kept saying preternaturally. It's so infrequently correctly used that, that was a whole week that we lost productivity. Xander wasn't upset or wasn't very happy about it, but. What are you going
to
do?
I think you bring up a good point that all these bands we've just listened to are unique in their own way, but also, if I may, quintessentially American. Wouldn't you agree, Pip?
I would 100% agree. I'd give it 110%.
Elliot, would you say they're preternaturally American?
I don't know what that word means, but I'm going to say yes.
Oh, nice.
And while we're riding this vocabulary high and music high, I think that we have enough energy to push us into our next segment, Vince.
I think so too, Elliot. It's called Did You Know?
The listeners, Did You Know is our weekly rapid fire fast fact segment that fires five facts at you from whatever town we're in. Of course, we have five. It's no different than any other week. And guys, I have the first one.
Let's hear it, Elliot.
Did you know that Hampshire, New Hampshire, has made it its duty and its job to out any British actors who play American parts in films?
What a noble service.
Yeah, so for instance, there's a lot of people that maybe thought Andrew Lincoln from Love Actually and from The Walking Dead was American, but Pip, can you explain how the creative way that you ousted Andrew Lincoln from the American community?
Harassment. Just online harassment.
Oh, it's as simple as that. And that got him
cyberbullying, right?
Yes. I found the most effective way to shame someone is to go online and get a bunch of people to go in on it with you.
Good old fashioned wholesome American cyberbullying. That's what I love about Hampshire, New Hampshire.
One of the many things, Elliot. Now, Pip, do you have the next Did You Know fact for us?
I do. Did you know that Hugh Laurie has a summer and winter home here?
Really? Why would he have two homes here?
Well, you've got the different sides of the town. So one is hotter than the other, and one is closer to the sea.
Mm-hmm.
Why would he want two houses here when you guys cyberbullied him so much that he had to quit house?
Well, it was a bit of a Stockholm syndrome, wasn't it? He fell in love with us in the town from our savage wordplay.
I see. Yep. I think it's really no coincidence that he built houses here.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, I didn't know that, guys. Did you know that the Boston Tea Party took on quite a different meaning here in Hampshire, New Hampshire?
What meaning was that, Vince?
The citizens of Hampshire, when they originally switched sides and declared their support for the American effort, said in a published playbill to New England that the only thing that's even more disrespectful to tea than pouring it into the ocean would be drinking it and then peeing it out on the ground.
Pip, what is your feeling on this?
Well, tea is sacred, and that was a bit of rubbish.
Wait, did you say tea is did you use the word sacred?
I did say sacred.
Did you say rubbish? What is rubbish?
It's what you put in the bin, you know, on
hold on. Elliot, I mean, I know we haven't been in New England for a few months, but am I taking crazy pills here?
I don't think so. There must just be a lot of idioms around here that we're not privy to, Vince.
Listen, the lorry comes around to pick up the bin every Wednesday.
Wait, you made Hugh Laurie be a garbage man here?
Well, yes. That's taking cyberbullying to another level.
He knows what he did.
I didn't know that, and I feel really bad for Hugh Laurie now. But guys, did you know, and I don't know if Pip, you're even going to know this, that the flag at the center of town has a typo on it?
Yes, that's right.
Wait, it is? Wait, I didn't know this, Elliot. What do you mean?
So the flag in the center of town is, I'm sure people recognize it. It's the 13 Colonies snake flag that Ben Franklin designed. But instead of no taxation without representation, it says taxation without representation. So somebody must have forgotten the no, right, Pip?
Yep. That was an accident.
Hold on. I'm taking a look now out the southern window of the RV, and there's also a snake on the smaller flag below that. It's all squashed, and it says, "Do tread on me."
Yeah, it's a snake with like a boot print on it.
Yeah, well, you forget the NT, and all of a sudden, everyone's in a fuss.
The boot print is clearly from what would be, I would venture a guess, an Oxford boot.
It's actually, I think maybe it's like a guerrilla marketing campaign for Doc Martens or something.
I would not know what those shoes are.
Yeah, of course you wouldn't.
Or that television program.
Fair enough.
Pip, do you have the last did you know fact for us?
Yes, I do. Did you know that the sun never sets on Hampshire, New Hampshire?
That doesn't sound right.
Is this a turn of phrase? I know that you guys up here have this very dry wit about you.
Well, Hampshire, New Hampshire has colonies all around the world. We've colonized far and wide, actually. So before the sun sets in one location, it's already up in another.
I can't say that I'm actually tracking. I'm not sure I'm understanding what you mean by that, Pip. I don't know how a town would have colonies.
Yeah, well, we went and invaded a bit of Uganda, for instance, and a bit here in India, where we get many of our spices and fragrances from. And then there's the Bahamas, which we have set up many establishments and bases in.
See, now that just strikes me as inefficient since you share a time zone with them. So the sun setting wouldn't actually...
It's a turn of phrase, Vince. It's a folksy way of looking at things, a positive way of looking at things, right?
Oh, I see.
That's right. Nothing unusual here.
The thing I do find unusual, though, is I didn't know it was legal for American cities to go out and colonize things. I thought that America as a whole did that.
Well, we have a mayor with a lot of gumption.
Rowan Atkinson.
That's him.
That explains everything. So I'm satisfied, and hey, I'm more than satisfied. I'm delighted with how this episode turned out. Thanks so much, Pip, for joining us. Much good luck to you and to Knickers and Chips in the future.
Thank you. Can you say my full name one more time?
I'll leave that honor to Elliot.
Pip Swellington, of course. And is there something that happens if we say your name a certain amount of times?
I just get pleasure.
There's that table going off again.
And as we force it down, let's force our way into the next segment, our final segment, Vince. Wish you were here.
So listeners, in a perfect world, you'd join us in all of our adventures, but we don't live in that perfect world, so the next best thing is an audio postcard from us to you. It goes a little something like this. Dear listener, wish you were here in Hampshire, New Hampshire.
A town that is as American as apple pie, hot dogs, fireworks, or the Nuge.
A town ironically mayored by Rowan Atkinson, but unironically beloved by every red-blooded American who travels through its city limits.
Including Pip Swellington, proprietor of All-American store Knickers and Chips.
A town where you can hear such Americanisms as the lorry and, hey, let's cyberbully Hugh Laurie.
And a town that is always fiercely loyal to the red, white, and blue.
Farewell from these parts to yours.
Listeners, I hope you got your fill of Knickers and Chips this week in Hampshire, New Hampshire, but join us next week when Vince and I are in Brumski, Arkansas.
And go ahead and hold those letters of complaint about Knickers and Chips. Everything's on the level. Brumski, Arkansas, on the other hand, is a town that is entirely a single Amazon warehouse. Because of this, the town's citizenry is employed as pickers. Now that's interesting. Tune in next week. It's going to be great.